The odds of winning on any provided gambling system are stacked against you, and over time, all of the money that you wager as a group will be lost.
Have you ever won a lot of money at a casino?
Thanks a lot, Tim. No, I have not.
This episode of Stand Up Business is sponsored by Fluid Asset Management, investment stewards since 1981, and pioneers in foundational financial literacy. Mark, hello, good morning.
It's the festive season.
Okay.
And I don't know if all of you have left before our last vlog of the year. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. I mean, as you mentioned, this is our last vlog. We're coming back on the 7th of January.
Yeah.
So please look out for us then and have a happy holiday.
Yeah, happy holidays, everyone.
I know. Okay, should we go now? Are we done?
Yeah, go. Let's start with gambling. Let's take a gamble.
Gambling. Okay.
That's all right. Yeah, gambling. Now, I read in the City Press, I think it was followed up by an article by News24, that South Africans have gambled away, quote unquote, over a trillion rand. That's quite a lot of money, Tim. It's a T. It's got a T in it. That's when you're in the proper big league.
Can I just make a point on this? Because this arises from the National Gambling Board's annual report.
Right.
And the trillion rand that you're talking about there is basically the amount wagered. This is not how much people lost.
Not bet.
So this is the amount people lost.
Yeah.
The amount people put on the table, right? But they get some of that back because they win some of this, right?
Yeah. Well, you're making the assumption that they get anything back. Now, let me tell you that gambling is not without science, okay? So the more people that gamble, the safer it is for the odds provider, because what they do, like all other risk behavior of crowds, is they eventually follow some sort of distribution of returns, okay? And all that you have to do as a provider of risk is calculate what the probabilities are and skew the economics in your favor, the odds in your favor. So, you know, the odds of winning on any provided gambling system are stacked against you. And over time, all of the money that you wager as a group will be lost. That's how it works.
And that's right. I mean, if you bet on a roulette table,
you'll lose money.
Yeah, because the zero goes to the house, right? The zero isn't going to come up every time, but you know, eventually it will.
Yeah, but not only that. Even if the zero never comes up, although it's included in the odds,
right?
All of the odds are calculated statistically and very accurately,
right?
And then they work out the payout ratios and things of that nature, lotteries, all of these things have this calculation, actuarially sound calculation underlying them, which says that if at infinity, if everyone bets forever, we will make X.
Right.
Okay. And they know what that is, and that covers their costs and makes a profit. It's a separate discussion about what you could do with the profits, because you could extract virtue out of gambling by, you know, the lottery board and so on, applying those profits to education or to food security or water, or all those things. But that's a separate discussion. But here's how it is. The people who lose the most, Tim, are those who win early. Okay, have you got it?
No. And the reason for that is completely about human nature.
Yeah.
Because if you win early, you think you're a genius.
Yeah, and then you have a full go. Okay. Yes. So the people that are best off are those who, like, you know, lose a little bit, and eventually have to go home and sulk because they've done rather well than the other guys. Anyway, it's pervasive. It is, I mean, in sport, you can bet on anything. Do you want to bet? You want to bet about that too? I bet you can bet on anything. Okay. Anyway, so it's a fascinating industry.
Can I just tell you some interesting stats here now that I'm looking at the National Gambling Board's annual report? Okay.
Mm.
So in which province in South Africa do people bet the most?
It must be in North Limpopo, probably, I'm guessing. Limpopo or Gauteng?
No. The answer is the Western Cape.
Oh, big casinos there.
No. The interesting thing is...
horses?
No, sports betting.
Mm.
Online sports betting.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I would guess that's the reason. And it's interesting because the amount of betting, the amount wagered in 2021 was way, way, way in favor of Gauteng.
Okay.
The Western Cape was about half of that.
It's because everyone's moved to the Cape.
No. I think that's it.
I mean, hello. It's not one left yet.
Yes. I'm sure that's part of it. But I also think the Western Cape have just opened up online sports betting and people are taking advantage of it more in the Western Cape. It's just amazing.
Yeah, you can bet, you know, yeah. You can bet on anything. You can.
Have you ever won a lot of money at a casino?
Thanks a lot, Tim. No, I have not. Okay. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Okay. I mean, I used to 30 years ago.
I mean, it's just amazing. Every time I go to a casino, I lose. Yeah, well,
I mean, 30 years ago, I'd be at some place like Sun City because it was sort of a novelty then.
Right.
And I'd go in and have a joy at the machines or the roulette table or something. I was down to see the Jim Jeffries concert in the Cape a couple of weeks ago, and it was at the Grand West, so I had to walk through the machine room.
Right.
It is a terribly depressing place. Yeah. And that's even before you look at the faces of the people sitting there robotically feeding this hungry machine. I've never thankfully won a lot of money gambling, and I've lost lots of little bits, but I've kind of worked it out, so I'd rather not. Yeah.
You could say, I mean, if you were trying to find a good view of gambling, you could say it is a tax on people who are bad at maths.
You're entering into a world here that I'm not going to be standing next to you on. Okay, but now that you mentioned bad at maths, we are growing the world's champions at bad at maths. Okay, we entered our grade fives in a worldwide competition of 59 countries against their grade fours.
Right.
And we came, listen to it, stone last. Now, that's not that funny, actually. We also have, as you know, we got this problem with grade fours who can't read from reading. And now I see that all of the agricultural colleges, where agriculture is kind of used to be our second biggest earner of foreign exchange, are dilapidated and falling apart. Tim, if we don't solve education, mate, there ain't a future. There ain't a hope for addressing inequality without education.
Yep. I mean, what you're talking about is something which has a very, very interesting name. It's called the TIMSS report, and this is the largest multinational test of maths proficiency and science proficiency around the world.
Right.
It happens once every 4 years. The results have just come out, and according to TIMSS, no relation.
No, nothing. No comms, nothing.
No overlap here at all.
Yeah.
Just saying. We're worst in the grade four grouping.
Yeah.
But what makes it worse is that we didn't send grade fours to the grade four test.
I know.
We sent grade fives.
Yeah.
I don't know why we just don't send the matrix to the grade four test. I mean, what the hell? I mean, if you're going to cheat, you know.
It's like there's an under-20 rugby tournament and we send our Springbok team to play against them. And we lose.
And we lose. Yeah,
no, it's actually very sad. It's not funny at all. I mean, it's really sad and it's curable and fixable. And we have to do, if nothing else, that is pivotal in our future. I'm sad about that. But there it is. You know, talking about gambling and money and stuff, and people love a bargain. Guess how much South Africans spent on Black Friday? By the way, I found out that Black Friday is not a day, right? It's like a week. Okay.
Yes, it can
either go on longer. It can go on longer than a week, depending on whether you've made your budget or not, because you have sort of this week's Black Friday specials and then week plus one extra special Friday. Anyway, we spent as a population 30 billion rand on so-called bargains.
No, it's
amazing. I don't know.
The interesting thing about Black Friday is, like, as you say, it's sort of like Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, because there was a time when Christmas was a day.
Yeah.
Then it became something else.
Yeah.
Then it became the Christmas season.
Yeah. and all of these things.
And it's like Black Friday used to be a day.
Yeah.
Now it's Black Friday season.
Yeah. And all of these things come together to form the foundation of January. Okay.
Yes.
Because everyone worries in Jan. Yeah, because Jan, you get your paycheck this week,
right,
and then you only get your next one in the last week of January.
Yes.
And that's like a bridge too far for lots of people. So we need, I'll tell you what we need.
What?
And this is going from the top to the bottom of our structures. We need a deep and fundamental understanding of money which I find glaringly absent at even some of the highest decision-making bodies that are responsible for our country's monies. A lack of understanding, you know, can be fixed. And, you know, that might lead to some better decisions and some better responsibility. Anyway, we're talking about big sums of money, Tim.
Yeah.
I see our friends McKinsey, okay, yes, have paid a little admission of guilt.
Okay.
Now, right, of little, you know, 1.1 billion rand. And I imagine that's a small fraction of their worldwide earnings. But this is the part that puzzles me. If you steal money, you don't become less guilty by paying it back. Okay, you don't. Okay, you can't, like, because if that were true, then we'd all have like an option on stealing. You steal a car, but if the Oaks find you out, you go like, okay, you can have it back. Okay, and you know, so that's bullshit. Okay, to use an accounting term, if you steal something and you're found guilty, you give it back and you get punished. Yes. Now, I hear they've got a new mandate for punishment.
Yes. No. Apparently, it turns out that they are the official advisors to the business group on South Africa's participation in the G20.
There you go.
So I thought, well, that was quick. It's funny how fast in South Africa.
Yeah, I steal from you, I pay you back, and you give me an opportunity to earn that payment back, and it's roly-poly, flip-flop me, you scratch back. It's terrible for words. And the worst part is that we're kind of all used to it now, eh?
Well, you know, it is interesting because I'm presuming that McKinsey aren't acknowledging any actual legal wrongdoing. They are just saying,
No. They paid the money gratuitously because it's the festive season. Hello. I mean,
yes. And it's also Black Friday, and Black Friday and the festive season overlap.
So this is
a good time.
It's an admission of guilt, man. I'm sorry. You know, forget about what legal processes, this and that. If you sit down and pay, you're paying for some reason other than, you know, generosity. If, in particular, if you took the money by mischievous means in the first place. Ach, Nehmann, I'm not interested in that.
What's the difference between investing and speculating? Should you time the markets or spend time in the markets? What is risk and why spend so much time managing it? Why is compounding considered the most powerful force in the universe? And why is time one of the most important elements in the compounding formula? Learn these and other key investment principles from one of the best in the industry. In his book, Time in the Markets, Dave Fuad, founder of Fuad Asset Management, shares anecdotes and experiences earned over decades immersed in the markets. Valuable insight that will have you investing successfully for the long term. Download your free copy of Time in the Markets from their website, fuad.co.za. That is F-O-O-R-D. And while you're there, look out for Fuad Industries' first Teach Your Child to Invest picture book series about saving and investing. Fuad Asset Management, investment stewards since 1981 and pioneers in foundational financial literacy.
All right. I'll tell you what. Let's move to what happened this year, because this is our last effort. And, you know, what happened this last year, oddly enough, starts like today. Because all of a sudden, after, 19 years, the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad just collapsed. Boom, like that, over the weekend. I mean, it was incredible. Incredible. So the family has run the country for 50 years and has been, you know, notoriously cruel right through the, you know, the sort of period. I read something that said Assad had phoned all of his allies, that would be, you know, Iran and Russia and some of the Gulf states, and said that he wants to carry on fighting. And it turns out they didn't.
But hang on. But one of those conversations with one Vladdy.
Yes.
Said, hey, Vlad, you want to come and continue to fight? He said, no, man, but I'll tell you what you'll do. Come visit us. We'll put you up for a while. Okay, like forever. Okay, now you explain to me whether that's not another admission of guilt in disguise. You know, so you phone up and go,
that's true.
Hey, Bruce, have you got any Airbnbs available? Airbnbs, I can do better than that. Bring the family, man. Bring the family. And you can come stay here with us. I don't know. Is there a political club of mutual forgiveness and tolerance and alignment that just goes on and on and on, round in circles, and there's no objective test of it. Those in power look after those in power, look after those in power who stay in power. Okay.
Well, especially if you're an authoritarian leader, if you're an authoritarian leader and another authoritarian leader is in trouble, you know, you kind of stick together.
We authoritarian leaders must stick together. And that's not a suggestion, it's an instruction. Okay. Tim, you're depressing me, man. It's holiday time.
No, it's not depressing at all. This is fabulous. It's fabulous. I mean, in a way, obviously now there is, you know, there are sort of competing forces in Syria, and it's quite easy for everything to go forwards and then go backwards very fast. Look at, for example, Egypt and some of the leaders, you know, it's still a very divided territory. Yeah. There are the anti-Assad groups, you know, are not themselves particularly united. So, you know, it's going to be a problem area for ages. But to me, it is incredible because it's basically a black eye for both Russia and Iran, who were both supporting the Syrian government. And it's interesting, the reason they couldn't help him is because they were themselves too occupied with other conflicts. So Russia in Ukraine and Iran in the Middle East generally. Yeah.
But it was, as we all know, the year of elections. More than half the world's population went to the polls in one form or another, but that brought about change, okay? Some of it was by revolution, some of it was by persuasion, some of it was by the popular vote, some of it, but so there is change, but there's also not change, eh? There's still a lot of entrenched, even in democracies, entrenched aging authority.
It is a kind of two-sided coin, isn't it? Because, you know, there was a lot of change. That's never, you know, that's what I think it's, you know, generally a good thing, right? You want change.
Yeah.
You want things to move. But actually, quite a lot of the change was extremely messy. And you can see that very clearly now in places like France, South Korea, even Georgia. So the year of democracy did herald some kind of forward movement, you could say, if you are a supporter of popular governments. But it also did result in some real messes.
The question comes to mind as to whether democracies now are appointing representatives or rulers.
Okay. Yes.
And I thought their job was to appoint representatives of the people, but they're actually appointing people that rule them.
Yes.
And I'm struggling with that conundrum.
Okay. Yes.
This gets into that whole discussion of presidential powers and entrenched party powers and all of those kinds of things. I don't have a better suggestion, but democracy must appoint your representatives.
I mean, you know what's interesting about all of this is that if you were trying to kind of draw an international lesson out of this about the kind of the turbulence that we saw this year and also the messiness that resulted from the turbulence, I think you'd have to say there are two things. The first thing is that people around the world really got a shock from inflation. I mean, they really did.
Mm.
Much more than we thought they would.
Mm.
Because actually, you know, everybody around the world, inflation, it does affect your outlook.
Yeah, and your expectations.
Even if your salary sort of keeps track of inflation,
yeah,
it's kind of shocking that eggs cost 50% more, you know, or something like that. And then the second thing that I would suggest is government debt. Government debt around the world, you know, I still remember that time when it was considered really bad for a government to spend more than 3% of its income, so for the deficit to be more than 3%. And now everybody does. The entire world is now spending more than 3% of its debt.
Well, in my view, we've gone one step further than overspending. Our government has seen fit to write off debts. You know, if I look to this BRP process in the post office, which is a disgrace, and others, you know, I think business rescue practitioners have a role to play in normal business society where there's vested interest in shareholder outcomes and all of those good things. But if the government is the owner and is, in my view, therefore responsible for the creditors of any government organization, for the government to start entering into creditor compromises is beyond my acceptable limit. I mean, you know, if the government can willy-nilly, you know, give you back 10 cents in the rand, even if you're a pension fund or a medical aid, then help me with government guarantees as a concept, or help me with the sovereign state as a financial beacon or foundation, because that should not be allowed, okay? In a government entity, you should not be allowed to enter into a compromise with your creditors. What do you think of that, Tim?
I do. I mean, I agree. And there is a sort of consequence of all of this, because what you're talking about here, you know, it's a South African problem, but it's also international, right? And my guess is that, you know, a lot of people is that things like Bitcoin are starting to make so much more sense to people because they are supra state. You know what I mean? They are beyond the state. Yeah. And that is a very, very interesting development that we will have to watch next year when we return. And we are fresh.
Well, let's go and freshen up then, Tim.
Okay.
That'll do for this year. Have a great break, everybody. Let's come back full of energy and good things to do.
It's been great fun doing this.
Lovely fun. Lots of fun. And lots of enthusiastic comments and support. Thank you.
Absolutely. All righty. Ciao.